Welcome to the Forward with Purpose podcast. Your hosts are Linda Keener-Thomas from the National Memorial for the Unborn and Mindy Lefeshore from An Even Place Virtual Abortion Healing Groups and Coaching for Pro-Life Ministry Workers. We understand the power of addressing the abortion wound, which then allows us to confidently stand in the gap for the next person. We also understand how lonely and heavy this work can be. This podcast is designed to connect you with other leaders doing this work, to learn from the vast wealth of knowledge and experience that is out there. God has designed you for greater things. God has commissioned you to a precious and sacred place in abortion recovery ministry work. It is our hope you are encouraged and equipped as you move forward with purpose in your ministry. And if we get off on a tangent, which I don't know, men don't get off on tangents as much as women do, but
well, no, I love doing these kind of things.
Okay.
So I just really enjoy doing these.
So why are you retiring?
Because it's time.
So
here's the thing. I told Andrew when I was telling him I was retiring, I didn't even say retire. I said, I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to be your first high impact volunteer. And he was like, huh? I said, well, I'm retiring, but I still want to be involved. Like, I still want to be around. I still want to do the things I do because I love the church and I love the pregnancy center. So let me help you wherever I can. Because I mean, I have a large network in Ohio and Michigan, a lot of good relationships. Like, yeah, I don't want to stop doing some of that. But I also, when somebody calls and says, hey, can you come and like, well, you know, not today because I'm going to be with my grandkids. You know, like I want that in to be number one right now. You know, that's another part of the whole retirement thing is I think God's calling me to a few different things that we haven't done well as church, you know, Cap C Church, of how do we walk with those that are walking through miscarriage? Mm. How do we walk with those that have, you know, abortion in their past? How do we walk with those that are widows? How do we walk with those that have elderly parents? Like, we haven't taught ourselves, you know, and others how to do that well. And I think God's kind of calling me into this area of, can I help my area churches walk well with others? Because one of the ladies on our team, she told me that after her miscarriage, she went back to church. Somebody approached her and whatever the lady said, she says, I wanted to punch her in the mouth.
Like,
oh my gosh, how can we be that insensitive? You know, like we maybe think that we're saying something that's kind and, you know, but a lot of times we're not.
Well, that's the thing. The motive behind a lot of times is really good. And so not just teaching the church how to walk along and say, maybe not say the right things, but be compassionate, you know, understand what doesn't sound compassionate, but helping those that are actually hurting to understand we need forgiveness. Like we need that continual compassion back, even though they aren't necessarily in a place of strength, you know?
Right.
Because I just remember sitting in the pregnancy center training, and I recall somehow a conversation got started about miscarriage loss and how insensitive the church was. And it wasn't just that they were bringing it up like it's being brought up now. It was brought up with kind of some seething anger attached to it. You could see the hurt behind it. And I remember thinking, because they at the time, the person who brought it up actually made some comments of the comments that were made, like shared what the person said. And I remember thinking, well, gosh, I would have thought that was an okay comment too. You know, I would not have known any better, and it would not have been from. So I think those that are hurting, they're easily hurt for one, but they believe that the person is maybe being intentionally insensitive when maybe they're not, you know, and they just really, because if you have not been through miscarriage loss, you don't really understand.
No, you don't.
And, you know, if you haven't been through elder care, you don't really understand. If you haven't been through abortion, you don't really understand. And there are way too many platitudes in the church, you know, throw something at it and everything will be okay. Like as though it's that easy to overcome. Yeah. Something and it's really not. So,
you know, I put together a 2-hour workshop to try to take into churches on abortion recovery and what not to say, what to say, just giving the leadership training. And we did it in a couple churches, got great response, But the issue has been getting into the churches, how to
Right.
get that door open, how
Right.
for to
Yep.
get them to commit that time, to get that
Right.
training. Bob, what is your vision for training the church in this area?
I mean, in my area, I'm well known. I have 30 pastors that are on a pastor list that I send that I took from the pregnancy center that were, part of our donors and that kind of stuff, those churches. And so I've been good friends with those pastors for a long time. And I still continue to send them a monthly email saying, hey, just thinking of you, praying for you. Here's my prayer for you this month or, whatever it is. And not even asking for anything, but like, man, you guys have a tough job. And so I just want to be your partner. I want to be here for you and I want to pray for you and help you through. And so I think it gives me a little bit of an open door. I'll say, and this is sad, but it's hard for women to get the open door. It just is. It's a matter of fact. And whenever I'm speaking to somebody that's a development, person or something like that, I'm telling them, take a guy that's a board member or somebody, that's a guy with you, take them with you because they're going to have a better chance to open the door. I'm sorry to say it, but it's true. And we just need to be more open to having conversations. And so
And developing
whatever
relationship, it
way,
sounds
yeah,
like.
exactly. Whatever you can do to give you a little, open door, then take that with you. So, but yeah,
That's
that's.
interesting. I wouldn't have thought that it, I never would have put that connection together that it's harder for women, but
It
oh, yes.
absolutely is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've I had a much easier time than the ladies on my team did. And it's the same, in most pregnancy centers. They have the same kind of deal. Unless they already have those relationships and they're really continuing to cultivate those relationships.
But
I think it's
that's
kind of hard.
where the men that love our ministries, and there's not that much for them to do, they can have an
Oh,
opportunity to
absolutely.
step in and be a
Yep.
partner in it and
Yep.
help open those doors. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's good.
Well,
Yeah.
as you can see, we are already into our conversation. And so our official intro to Forward with Purpose has not taken place and probably won't for this segment. But I want to just introduce Bob Hershey. He's our guest today. He's with CareNet. And I've been getting to know Bob over the past couple of years, off and on through different networks and, working together and not really working together yet, but just kind of at a distance working together. Let me put it that way. We kind of like are doing the same thing at a distance. And so there's a support in that network piece there. And anyway, I want to, Bob, I'd like for you to just tell us a little bit about your story and how you got involved with CareNet. And
Yeah. And I'll just, I mean, it really comes from going way back to when I was 18 and just into college and we got pregnant. And it was, what do we do? We know what we should do, but there's that other side that says, hey, you know what? You don't necessarily have to tell anybody and you can get away with it, right? And she's my wife now, but we went to doctor. Basically, he looked at us and said, you're two young, intelligent people. Why would you not want to have this baby? And so when I get back to the car, I woke up because I don't remember where we were. I don't remember the doctor. I remember nothing about it. But I remember getting back to the car and saying, you know what? We need to do this right. Although we already messed it up, we need to do the right thing. And so now we've been married 45 years. We have three kids and we have five grandkids. But my story is so much different if somebody says, go take care of it, right? And I think really that's why he has called me into where I'm at with pregnancy center ministry. I've been in pregnancy center ministry for 14 years. Really weird the way I got into it because I was out of work for a little while. And a buddy of mine says, why don't you go volunteer at a pregnancy center? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like,
That's not a
there's
normal guy thing to say,
right.
right?
Like, where did that come from? But
Yeah.
he says, there's the guy side to this. I'm like, okay, now you're where my heart is and where my passion is for the men to raise up, to be the leaders they're supposed to be. How can I help them, within this? So I volunteered at a pregnancy center local to me for about a year and really did some programming with them and those kind of things and talking to the guys. And then from there, I actually put in an application for a volunteer coordinator position. It was just a part-time position at the pregnancy center that I ended up at in Cleveland. And so I was there doing that for 5 years, stepped away for about a year and a half. And at that time, the executive director had stepped away. So there was an interim kind of that was going on. About a year and a half after that, I said, do you guys need to talk or what? And they said, yes, let's talk. And so then I was the executive director for 6 years. And so there was really got to know CareNet well in that time and understand kind of who they were and how they do things and just understand how gospel centric they are and just love, you know, kind of what they do. So actually, I had applied for a different position at the beginning. Didn't get that, but was so excited about the guy that did get it. I was like, this is a guy that we've already fed into, and now he's taken on this position with Fatherhood and has been doing an amazing, amazing job. But through the interaction that I had with some of the people on staff, they actually came probably about a year later and said, hey, we're doing things a little bit different with our church engagement and our Making Life Disciples, and we want you to take over the Midwest region. I just was like floored. And like, you know, this is bad timing. And God was real quickly to tell me, you know, my timing is the best. Like, okay, you're right. So that's where I, you know, stepped into my position at CareNet. So that was kind of history and what took me to where I'm at. So there you go.
And how long ago was that? Or how long have you been with
So
CareNet?
it's been just over 2.5 years, about 2.5 years.
2.5 years. Oh, you came in just basically when I met you, was you were new into CareNet. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yep.
That was right before the Arizona conference
Yes.
when
Yeah.
Jill was launching the Leader's Guide. And
Exactly. Yep.
wow.
Yep.
Okay.
And then how about the abortion recovery piece? How about your interest in that particular area?
So what had happened, I was at the pregnancy center, the executive director there, and somebody had said, hey, there's a guy that needs to connect with your guy that's doing abortion recovery. I'm like, okay. So I connected them. And I followed up with this guy maybe 3 weeks later. And I said, hey, how's it going? You know, did you guys connect or what? And he said, no, I haven't heard from him. Like, oh my goodness. Like, you cannot leave, especially guys, you can't leave them out there just hanging, right? Because they'll just walk away and that's fine. I'm done with it. And so I reached out to him and I actually went through some training of my own. I said, well, somebody's got to help this guy because our guy got too busy and he was busy with work and that kind of stuff. And I said, well, somebody's got to help him. It's probably going to be me. So I went through some training, a little bit of training, and then we started going through some material together. There was actually a guy that was volunteering with us also that really needed to go through some healing, and just mainly so I could have him be this other guy and help out, you know, doing some of this. And so we actually went through, the three of us went through the material, and just seeing him come out on the other side. And this is a part of the ministry that I've always absolutely loved. Because I see them go in with their shoulders slumped and their heads down. And yet when they come out, like their head is up, their shoulders are back, there's a confidence that they have, you know, men and women. And it just thrills me when I see
It's
somebody
addicting,
walk
isn't
through healing. It's amazing. It's
it?
just so fun to watch the
Yes.
transformation. And so I was doing that. And in the middle of that session, somebody else reached out and said, hey, I have another guy for you. What is going on? So I let another guy through, and just, you know, the same thing happened. And so that's where it really got started, was somebody reaching out, and we just didn't have anybody. And I said, well, I'm just going to step in. And, you know, not having abortion in my past, like, who am I to even step into this place, you know? But God keeps calling me back in, and I keep going, okay, well, if you're going to keep the door open, I'm going to keep stepping because, yeah. Want
Yes.
to be obedient.
I'm so excited about that too, because so many people God is raising up without abortion in their past. So just tell us about the value of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it really, I came to understand the value of it working at CareNet, working with Jill Marquis, who actually runs our abortion recovery and care arm of the ministry with CareNet. And she basically said to me, she said, you know what? You kind of are the guy from the church side that says, hey, I'm going to walk with you. Because so many times we have pushed, you know, those that have abortion in their past, we push them away from the church. When she says, you know what, you're actually showing that you're from the church and you want to show compassion on them. You want to help them walk through healing and you want to walk with them. And that just shows that the church is here for them and wants to be for them. And so that's really when she said that to me, I'm like, that makes sense. I can do that because I love what we should be doing that as a church, right? And so that's where it just makes sense to me now.
Yeah. Well, you know, you guys wrote a book,
Yeah.
Jill. I know she worked on a book with some other men and compiled some some good material. So tell us a little bit about reclaiming fatherhood.
Yeah. Well, it started from a book by Guy Condon. He used to be the president of CareNet a number of years ago, and he wrote this book, Aborted Fatherhood, or Fatherhood Aborted, I'm sorry. Sorry, hang on. So, Fatherhood Aborted, and it was basically stories. And so as we went through this, we were looking at the stories and going, okay, this is good, but what do we do with it, and where does it lead to healing? And so what Jill did was take the material and got four guys that have abortion in their past. And so they were on this panel with us. There was myself, and there was another guy that does fatherhood down in Cincinnati at a pregnancy center there. And so that group kind of got together, and we worked on this book. Basically, we took the book and said, this chapter needs to go here, and this one needs to go here, and this one needs to go here. And really just added a lot of biblical stuff to it, and then a lot of questions. And the guys, I mean, Jill and I both were, when they would come up with these like mic drops all the time, you're like, oh my goodness, like, wow, put that one down. And so that's really how the book got started. I mean, one of the guys had said that, you know, there's one thing, it means one thing to be forgiven. It needs another thing to be healed.
Yeah.
And like, wow, like what a story, because how many guys out there
Profound.
are going, oh, I'm forgiven. I'm good. I'm all right. I've been there. I know I'm good. Like, yeah, but have you been healed? That's a whole different work, you know, going through. And so that's really where the book came from and where it's at now. And now there's even some leadership training with those. Just last year we did some video work with it. And so there's Forgiven and Set Free that has video with it. And then there's also Reclaiming Fatherhood that has video. And it's just a leadership training that we walk through. And I can't say enough about it. Like,
So are you using it primarily as a weekly thing or a retreat? I know I've heard a lot of people say that retreats work better for guys because they're in and out, they get it done. What are you seeing the
you
churches do
know,
with the book?
and I'm finding out more about the retreat stuff. I'm really starting to step into some of that area myself. The book primarily has been used, you know, the 8-week study. But what I was invited, what was it? Just a couple months ago, I was invited to a Rachel's Vineyard retreat. They said, you know what? We don't have somebody to do kind of the spiritual leader piece of this. Would you? And I'm like, God, you keep calling me into these places. I'm going, what is going on? So I said, you know what? Yes, I have the time. I will do that and step into it. What an amazing time a weekend is. And to see the transformation happen in 3 days and not 8 weeks. You know, because there's so many things that can happen in the 8 weeks where, like, you know, a guy can check out, or yeah, well, we talked about it. I'm done with that. I'm moving on to the next chapter. You know, and so sometimes there's some things that get skipped in that. So actually, next weekend I am volunteer on a deeper still retreat.
Oh,
And
good. You're
so
just
it
getting the
was,
whole round gamut
I
there.
am, I'm like, I would just want to soak it all up, because there's no one perfect, you know, thing
Right.
that's going to do. Like, we want to all work together on all this. And like, we
Amen.
don't claim to have the, you know, corner on any of it, right? But
No.
and so there's a deeper still that's pretty close to me. And I was like, I just want to step into that and see what that is like. I mean, I'm getting into this retirement piece, so what's that going to look like after I retire? Like, I'll have more opportunities to do that too.
Yeah.
So I'm just excited about what God keeps calling me into.
You
I
know,
don't know.
now that you've been through Rachel's Vineyard and you haven't gone through deeper still yet, how is that complementary to each other, especially for men?
So for me, this is just kind of the way that I view it. And maybe it's different after I go through deeper still. I don't know, but it seems like the Rachel's Vineyard is a little more Catholic centric, I'll say. Okay, not that that's a bad thing or a good thing or whatever. It's just that's what it is. And some of the prayers and stuff were a little bit different than I probably would have put them. And so that's why I'm kind of looking forward to the deeper still. I come from more of an evangelical kind of a background. And so I'm looking forward to that piece of it and see what it's like. And already noticing, you know, some of the different things that they're done. I mean, I love some of the stuff that Rachel's Vineyard did for their like object lessons. Like, oh my goodness, like they were amazing. So I'm really interested to see what Deeper Soul is going to be like. And so, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'll be interested to see what you think, because I've been to both and I love both. I didn't
Okay.
go to the Catholic version of Rachel's Vineyard. It was a Protestant version. So did you
Okay.
go to the Catholic version?
So the ones that do it, they kind of do the same weekend, but one is more open to Catholics that are there, and so they'll take them to their mass and that kind of stuff, you know, while they're on the weekend. And the other one, they just don't offer it like that, you know, for those that are Catholic to go to mass and stuff. So
You
I don't
mentioned
think they do
object
much.
lessons in the retreats.
Yeah.
Of course, I used to do it with women. How do men respond to object lessons? Is that a powerful tool for them?
It, I think at the Rachel's Vineyard it was. There was, I would say there was a little reluctance on some of them. But overall, there was only one participant. And so he was like, okay, well, I guess I'm just gonna go with this. And so he was all in, but I could see a little reluctance, you know, in some pieces. And I think that's what, you know, when we're I know you were gonna bring up like what are some of the differences, you know, that you see with the guys with the reclaiming fatherhood. And I think that's one of the differences that we see is that it's not the we didn't take a woman's version, the forgiven and set free, and make it for guys. But you know, we took a guy's version and made it for guys. And so some of the object lessons are a little bit different. You know, when you get to the memorial service, you know, at the end, it's a little bit different. You know, the women's is a little more flowery and you know and those kind of things. And but the guy's is a little bit different. I don't know, manly, I guess, or whatever you want to call it, and doing some different things with it. So you know, whether it's shooting an arrow or you know something like that, like it's just a little bit different that way.
How, what, can you give us an example of an object lesson that you guys do that's different? In this, like the anger
I knew you'd
chapter or
ask that.
something,
Yeah.
put you on the spot. Go grab your book.
I'm trying to think because man, I got the book here. I didn't even think about that one.
Because I've heard that anger is a big component for men, maybe
It
even more
is.
so than women.
And I think that's probably the biggest one is where you can see when you're going around that wheel of you know forgiveness and trying to figure out who are those people and why are they the ones that are there. And it seems like guys in general, like their automatic emotion is anger. And like, but you always know it's not anger. There's something behind that that's driving that because that, you know, anger is a secondary emotion. So what is that? And so kind of the way that we get that is looking at this wheel and the emotions. And guys, I mean, in our book, we actually have the emotion wheel in there, you know, because we need it written out. Like, what is that one? Like, oh,
Okay,
and
that's
you know, I didn't think
interesting.
about that. You know, there's like 40 emotions that are on there, and we're like, okay, I got like three, you know. And so when you're trying to describe your anger at, you know, in the emotional side of it, like where does that really come from? And then you can start to pinpoint, like, oh, this is really what it is.
So
You
helping
know,
them
but guys
define
have to
it.
have a visual that they can see and go, oh, this is because we don't do emotions. Like I'm the weird one that, you know, my wife and I basically play opposite roles. I'm the one that cries at the movies and she's going, what are you crying? Like, yeah, leave me alone. I want to cry. You know, but most guys are not that, right? And so they need some kind of visual to go, oh, you know, here it is. This is the one. And so you can really point to those things at that point. But that I think the anger one is probably the most important one that the guys deal with. Just a lot.
When it sounds to me like even though the way men and women heal are different, it almost sounds, when I listen to you, we've had Victoria on, talking about men and healing, it almost, the healing basically takes the same kind of path. It might look different, but it's from, this low place to this high place at the end, but men don't talk generally as much. So what is going on in the group sessions?
And I think for guys when we're leading, when we're facilitating that, we have to be really intentional about listening. About what are they saying? And what are they not saying? And then be able to ask the right questions to get a little bit deeper. Tell me a little bit more about that. How, explain that. Where's that emotion coming from? What, where is it? How do you feel that at that time? And really just starting to dig a little bit deeper. And I think that's true with, I mean, I lead a men's ministry at our church and stuff. And I'm always telling the guys, like, we've got to be asking the tough questions. Like, I mean, the hard questions. Like, where's your thought life? Where are you at with that? Are you okay with it? And just, and then have them be honest with it, And I think there's one of the questions that I love the most is like, okay, and all the answers that you gave me today, were any of them a lie?
That's a great
That
question.
puts you on the spot right there.
Do
I'm
you
like,
ever
yeah,
have any say yes?
not yet.
Okay.
Or let's talk about that a little bit more.
I think, wait a minute, I'm writing this down. And all the answers that you gave me today, how many of them were a lie? Because I could say that I think that's true for women too. I think in our minds, we want to think that we're better off than we are. We want to downplay the pain that we felt because we want to be stronger than maybe we are, and maybe we just don't want to acknowledge our part, and we're masters at deceiving ourselves and covering ourselves up. That's why the scripture tells us the heart is deceitful above all else. Who could know it,
I mean, it just goes back to Adam going, it was, she gave it to me.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Well,
Shove the
and
blame someplace else.
yeah, and she's like, it was that thing crawling on the ground over there. It was that serpent. I'm just curious. We know that men have taken a lot longer to come into this healing, particular this space of healing, and partly because we haven't focused on them, but now the focus is more on the men. How many men are actually being raised up right now, do you think?
So I was asking Jill this question when you'd asked it. And so with Reclaiming Fatherhood, because we've had the leadership training that's going on, we have now had 43 men go through the Reclaiming Fatherhood training program, which is amazing to think that there's I mean, now it's a lot more for the women. I think in their first cohort, they had like 82 or something like that, but for the guys having 43, so the abortion recovery conference that we do every year here in Ohio. So I started going to, this will be my fourth year. So first year there, I was the only one. Second year there was two of us. Third year there was three of us. So this year, I'm hoping there's just going to be a lot of guys that are coming to this. And so that's kind of my push right now, is really helping the guys be aware of it. And that we really want to help you step into this area so we can see more and more men heal. As I went, one of the things that we know is that when we have strong men in the church, you're going to have a strong church. And so if that's the case, there are too many men sitting on our pews that are hurting and haven't been healed yet. And one of the things that I continue to say is that you can only serve as well as you've been healed. Right? Like, you're only going to serve so much, so well. One of the guys that walked through healing when he was at the church, nobody knew about it at the time. And he just felt like, I can't get too close to these guys because they're going to find out. Like, somebody's going to find out. I can't go deep with them because somebody's going to find out. I can't serve because I'm not as good as them, But now that he's walked through healing, he's now serving on his worship team. His relationship with his wife is so much better. Like that's what happens when there's healing that takes place. And now walking in a place of healing, you can serve so much better. Whether it's serving your wife, whether it's serving the church, whether it's serving your kids, your grandkids, whatever, it just comes from a place of healing, and it's just beautiful when it
And I've
happens.
wondered if that is the reason that so often the church leadership is resident,
Mm-hmm.
that not wanting to say, get the word out there.
Yes.
But I know we did a memorial service one time, and the main pastor was going to officiate, and he got sick, and an assistant pastor came. And it came out during the service that he had an abortionist background and just tears running down his face. You know, so we know that they're there. We know the elders and the church leadership that is unhealed. So if we could get them healed, then we've got a platform.
And I think that's, so important too. So this conference that we have coming up, I actually have two pastors that have abortion in their past that we're going to do a pastor's breakfast. I want them to share their stories to the pastors because there's so many men that, I mean, they, it's about 50%, that are sitting in our pew that could have abortion in their past. And so we really need to reach them. And the only way from one of the things that kind of came out of working through this book too, from the guys, is that all I needed was somebody to say, hey, there's a place that I can go for healing. And, because we don't even know where that is or
It's the
where.
same with women.
Yeah.
It's
And
really no
so it's,
different.
the story just needs to be told over and over and over again. I mean, I was on a retreat weekend. This was last year. I was on a retreat weekend. So I was on a leadership team, with these guys. And I think we had probably 12 or 15 guys that was, we were kind of getting ready for the weekend. And so just who I am and the things that I do with the pregnancy center, that kind of stuff. And with CareNet and all, and being a part of abortion recovery, I just kind of share, like, hey, here's what I do. And this is who I am. And, walking guys through healing and that kind of stuff. So we're going around the table telling our stories. Two of the guys are like, it's me.
Me too.
Never told anybody. Like, wow. I mean, when you start to share, it just opens up doors for others to go, dude, that's me. Yep.
Do you think shame plays the same role in men as it does women in terms of, like you just said, like you were sitting at a table with men, you shared what you were doing, and the two just said, "Hey, that's me." I don't hear women doing that very often in the group. Like I would see a woman going one to one, but not right then and
Okay.
there in the group.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a little more openness for men in that aspect?
I think it probably depends on, where you're at and what you're going through. Because we're just all getting really vulnerable at that point and allowing, to share our stories. So I think it kind of depends on that too. But I think you're right, is that guys, so the way guys are built, way God has made us, is that we've got to be perfect in all ways. We got to have all the answers. We have to know how to do this and how to do that. And so if we can't do something, even the conversations we have with our wives, it's like, if I can't win this one, I'm just going to back away and I'm going to go sit in my room,
If you
right?
can't
Like
fix it, right.
exactly. I got to fix it. And if I can't, I've failed. And I think for us to say that, hey, I didn't step up and I didn't lead the way I should have, that's failure. And we don't want to admit that, especially as guys, because we can always look at some other guy and go, man, this guy's got it together. Like, man, wish I was like that, And I mean, women do the same, but I think, I don't know, for me, I think it's so bad with the guys that we think somebody is so much better than us, And so for us to be able to share, it just brings us down even another notch. And so I think for guys, it's just really hard to kind of come out and say, I screwed up, I
I know
don't
for women, you've got some that chose the abortion and are owning that, and
know.
others that were coerced. With men, it's even a little bit different, because you've got some that forced the abortion or supported it, and some that were adamantly against it.
Or didn't know
What
until
or didn't even
later.
know till later, right? So, how does that work together? What kind of percentages are you seeing?
I don't know about percentages, but there are the guys that are walking through. I didn't know until later. One of these pastors, he was in military at the time, and this that's what happened to him. He didn't even realize that she had gone and had the abortions, and until a little bit later. And so, trying to understand, like, what does that mean for me, and how do I walk through that, right? And then those that, are never told and didn't know till much later, it really hits them hard. And then also the ones that are saying, Or that there's a situation just I think yesterday, with our CareNet team, hearing from somebody that the guy really wants to keep the baby, the woman didn't, was starting to change her mind, but then she, aborted anyhow, and he's like just distraught, like he doesn't know what to do, like he's just, lost this fatherhood position, that I mean. It's just really rough on him. And how does he handle that? And how does he walk through that now? And then, of course, how do you walk through that now with her, in the relationship? And what does that look like? It's just some hard places for the guys that, it's her body, her choice, right? Like I would always ask the guys, when they were at the pregnancy center, it's like, dude, here's the thing. Half of that kid is yours. What do you want to do with your half? Right? Like,
That's a good question.
no, you need to let her know. If you want your baby, you need to let her know. She's looking for you to lead. She wants you to lead. That's the way women are made. They want you to lead, and you need to help her make that decision. And so yeah, it's similar but different, for the guy.
Bob, I just wanted you to take a moment, if you would, from a male perspective, because I've never really asked this of a male. I can make assumptions on what I think I know, but I'm not a male. So when fatherhood happens, like particularly that first pregnancy of yours, you guys are in this decision-making mode and you had the opportunity to make the wrong decision. What happened in you? What changed in you knowing you were a father? I mean, as women, we understand what's changing in us right away because there's that baby in us, right? And there's a connection happening. There's the DNA cells that are passing, back and forth. There's a bond that's forming. But what's happening in the heart of a father when he finds out he's the woman's pregnant?
Well, I think there's probably a few different ways to kind of look at it. Some of it probably depends on how he was fathered, right? Because maybe he thinks that, man, I'm not going to be good enough. Or I know how my father fathered. I don't want to be that guy. And so you have kind of this intrepidation to walk into fatherhood sometimes as, man, I can't do this. And what's that going to look like for me? And I mean, for me, my father, he was, well, let's just put it this way. He was more an uncle to my cousins than he was a father to me. I mean, I'll just put it at that. That's kind of the way it was. And so there were some things that I saw in him that I'm like, man, I got to change some things and I got to do better than that. And so for me, it was reading the books on parenting and marriage and doing seminars and those kind of things. That's the path that I took to be able to be the best dad that I could be, and just to figure it out as I went along. Like, and so when once you realize the impact that you have on your kids, like, man, I really need to step up, and then to know that I'm responsible to them till the fourth generation. Like, whew, that's a responsibility, right? And so I think it's really understanding God's call, on your life to be a dad, first of all. And then how am I going to live that out? What's that going to look like? And then am I being an example to other dads, in their walk too? And so I think I hope that, sort of answers. It kind of went on a different direction, but some of that. But yeah, sometimes the
That's
guys
good.
are like, I don't know if I can be a dad. I don't know if I can, do this.
Here.
So yeah, it is.
I'm thinking about when the guys are after they've gone through the group with you, and I don't know if you guys are asking this particular question or if this conversation's being had. So if not, I guess the question will stop here. But what is one thing or the main thing or a similar thing that men are sharing after the group is finished that they feel has been healed or restored to them? What are
I think a lot of it is just the emotional side of the anger piece of it, for one thing. And the other piece is when they're able to actually name their child and really put dignity to their child has made like all the difference to them. I see them at that point when they get to do that, like things changed for them. the which was incredible. One of the guys that I had walked through, he says, "I don't think I deserve the honor to name my child." Wow. So it took him a while to work through that and finally did. But
I know
boy,
on the
that's rough.
memorial wall, we have a whole section that's all daddies. Daddy loves you. And I think for men, is it true that giving the last name is a powerful thing too, because they're adopting them into their family, owning
Right,
them
right.
as part of the family.
It is.
It's
It's
beautiful.
yeah, it
Let's
is.
take a minute to talk about this, because I know there is, in like a kind of a side shoot of abortion recovery, people that don't think that we should be doing this at all, and are adamantly against it. And I really just want to talk about the value and the importance of giving dignity to the child from our perspective as females, but also, Bob, from what you've seen in the men, just how, what that's, I don't know, just why this is so important as human beings for us to do.
I think it really helps them to understand their God-given, like this, God created this from you. I mean, he's created you, he's created your son or daughter, and I think for us to realize that, oh my gosh, I had an opportunity to really make this good and I didn't, but yet now I've been given that back because God is so gracious.
Redeemed
And he's
second
forgiven
chance.
me, and it's made it a beautiful thing to say, no, you know what? You're still a father
Yes.
because your child is in heaven. And
Yes.
so for them, it really speaks to just that fatherhood side of it, of what, God, I mean, God's plan all along, right? It's the man that becomes a father, and so they're really being called into that fatherhood place. Where, some of them thought, man, I don't deserve this and I couldn't have, and they kind of walk away from it and shove it down.
If they were to walk away from that and they were not to press into that and name that child and give that child dignity, they would actually walk away unhealed, because they would think, I still don't deserve good things, right?
Right.
And
Right.
that's a form
Absolutely.
of constant penance that we put ourselves in, that Jesus took on the cross. And so we, as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm like, that is just,
Yeah. I know one of
and
the
they're not nameless in heaven.
No, absolutely not. No.
No.
No. And one of the things that Jill says, a lot is that when we talk about, I can't forgive myself. You know what? That's not your responsibility. God is the only one. Jesus is the reason we're even forgiven. So it's him that we're reaching out to for forgiveness. Like it's not us. I can't, my forgiveness doesn't mean anything. Jesus' forgiveness, that means everything. So that's the forgiveness that I need to have, and really the perspective that I need to have with that too.
So you do
Yeah.
hear men say that as well, not being able to
Oh yeah.
forgive themselves, because we hear
Right.
that all the time with
Oh yeah.
women. And
Right.
I think it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, is it's not willing to really admit that I'm that
Right.
bad.
Yep, that's
It's
true.
not willing to really repent and admit that we really are as bad as we are. That's what
Right.
we can't do.
Yep. Sure.
Wow. Well, Bob, I really thank you for your time in coming and sitting
Yes.
with us and sharing with us and letting us get to hear from a man's perspective. We've had a couple of men on now, and it's really, they've had abortions in their past. You haven't. So it's good to hear from you as a representation of the church, and you represent them well. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, it's my honor to just do whatever God is calling me to in this space, and just to see more and more men healed. So thank you for allowing me to be with you guys and share.